You are the original personal founder of all the demigods and the orders of different gradations. Yet, you are the oldest and are unchanged. O Lord, you have no source or superior. No source or superior. You have impregnated the external energy with the semen of the total living entities, yet you are unborn. Hare Krishna. Okay, so in Prabhupada's purport, the Lord, the original person, is the father of all other living entities, beginning from Brahma, the personality from whom all other living entities in different gradations of species are generated. Yet the Supreme Father has no father. Every one of the living entities of all grades, up to Brahma, the original creature of the universe, is begotten by a father. But he, the Lord, has no father. When he descends on the material plane out of his causeless mercy, he accepts one of his great devotees as his father to keep pace with the rules of the material world. But since he is the Lord, he is always independent in choosing who will become his father. For example, the Lord came out of a pillar in his incarnation as Nisringadeva. So I guess that means that the Lord, that the pillar was his father. And by the Lord's causeless mercy, Ahalya came out of a stone by the touch of the lotus feet of his incarnation as Lord Sri Ram. He is also the companion of every living entity as the super soul, but he is unchanged. The living entity changes his body in the material world. But even when the Lord is in the material world, he is ever unchanged. That is his prerogative, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 14.3, the Lord impregnates the external material energy, and thus the total living entities come out in different gradations, beginning from Brahma, the first demigod, down to the insignificant ant. All gradations of living entities are manifested by Brahma and the external energy. But the Lord is the original father of everyone. The relationship of every living being with the Supreme Lord is certainly one of father and son, and not one of equality. Sometimes in love, the son is more than the father. But the relationship of father and son is one of the superior and the subordinate. Every living entity, however great he may be, even up to demigods like Brahma and Indra, is an eternally subordinate servitor of the Supreme Father. The Mahatattva principle is the generating source of all the modes of material nature, and the living entities take birth in the material world in bodies supplied by the mother, material nature, in terms of their previous work. The body is a gift of material nature, but the soul is originally part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Tvam na sranam asi sanyavayam utasta adya purusha purana tvam deva shaktyam gunakarma yonau vetas tvajayam tavimadadejo. So we're looking at the kind of perspective of, again, just that this is very, very what common theme in the Bhagavatam, repeated again and again, you know, for our edification from different angles and things like that, you know. Because in most, you know, in our lives, you know, we're kind of caught up with our little existence. And, you know, the most amazing thing is that everybody sees everybody else dying, you know, but everybody lives as if they would never die. You know, Well, a lot of these things are just really absurd. You know, another one is this, again, if you've had any kind of physiology at all, you know that if you take a scalpel, you can buy these things, not too expensive, and give a real firm pressure on the forehead and go straight down, you know, there'll be a lot of electrical energy generated and a lot of motion. But let's assume the person is a little bit anesthetized there, okay. Ourselves too. And what do you got? Again, this, the top part of the cavity is almost totally predominated by the lungs. And the bottom part of the cavity is predominated by the intestines and the digestive organs, liver, spleen, so on, like that. Which is interesting because that puts air and fire above the water and the fire down there. Yeah. And that's about it. Take those out and you've got the digestive organs and then you've got some reproductive organs there floating around. And you get the heart. But that's about it. So again, I've been really ourselves, we've been obsessed with this meditation. Practically speaking, these bodies are just like a very thin representation of the skin. And the face, of course, has a lot of muscles to generate different kinds of, you know, changes in the face, you know, so on. And again, there's muscles. That's a cell phone, you know, the actual picture, you're talking to somebody with their picture. The actual picture is very thin, you know, not even a millimeter thick, problem. And behind that, at least like maybe 20 times thicker, 30 times thicker, is all these little, you know, different integrated circuit parts and batteries and all these kind of things to generate this little thing. So from this perspective, you know, the living entity, the person, probably starts to purport off by saying, "The Lord, the original person," you know. So it's kind of hard for me and the others too to kind of think that, well, you know, persons are original, persons are substantial, because we've been trained, conditioned, you know, to think that matter is substantial and that people are produced from matter like that. By evolution over millions of years, I mean, God, how many millions of years, supposedly this is all taking place, and it's to generate people, you know, persons like that. Yeah. But the thing is, you can see even dogs are people. And probably even you got into, probably see even cockroaches are individuals, you know, so on. Yeah. So, but Krishna is the original person. You know, what does that mean? And so then, therefore, all this personality we see through our face, through our smiling, you know, through our, where we decorate ourselves, the kind of personal relationships we're concerned with, predominant and subordinate, you know, we call friendship. You know, different rasas are manifest, the Vatsalya ras, all these things. That it has to be coming from some other source. You know, it's very, very difficult to, unnatural to consider that it's all being generated from an impersonal source. The atoms and molecules, which are governed by, you know, the Schrodinger's equation and other equations, and can just be described in terms of mathematical properties, which are always pretty simple, you know, could then become more complicated, and then more detailed and more regulated, you know, and finally they start producing personalities as a covering. why does the whole thing evolve to produce personality as a covering, you know? Well, so I can track other people to consume them, you know? Like that, to get energy. And originally we were all one, you know. Now we separated, so we have to struggle for existence. This doesn't make any sense. Okay, so here we are on the puppet show. And I have my, you know, my Von Braun puppet, and somebody else has their Buck White puppet. And we're talking to each other. You know, "Hi, now, hi, how are you?" "Oh, one of them's well, I'm okay, how are you?" "How are the family?" You know? And trying to carry on some show which resembles the activities in Goloka Vrindavan, in Nandamara's village, and we're all trying to pretend we're Krishna. "I'm Krishna." "No, I'm Krishna." You know? So anyway, a little more to work out the exact essence of the thing here, but it creates, it's just a whole illusory process, you know? And the whole material world, of course, is designed to create this opportunity for living entities to become purified of a very fundamental disease, really, really very fundamental, you know? Again and again, we have different kinds of suffering. And I'm suffering this way, I'm suffering that way, you know. But at least, like these prayers start off with the demigods talking a lot about relief from suffering, you know. And, you know, it's really with the first, like, 8 prayers or something, they're all about just taking shelter at the lotus feet of Krishna. So they're not even concerned with, you know, of kneeling in front of Krishna at his knees, at his waist, or what to speak of standing up and, you know, talking with Krishna and embracing him as a friend, or what to speak of becoming parents of Krishna and taking care of him, like that and so on. So their attitude is, again, Prabhupada says, sakam devotees, you know. And, of course, what, we've all got some sakam devotee in us, probably, you know, with material desires. And then we complain, you know, we complain because, well, you know, I followed the process of religion. But were you actually following? Well, I wasn't actually following like that. Could you have followed? Yeah, but it would have been a sacrifice. But not that hard, you know. If it's too hard, then we're not actually following the process so properly, you know. The Prabhupada says, do your service, you know, do what you can do for Krishna. Not dog hard. And then we'll be on a pleasant platform. And we can advance from that platform. We don't have to be advancing from some miserable platform, you know, with all kinds of distress and everything else. No, it's a reasonable platform. We can do more work and become purified. And give up the idea that I'm here to enjoy. That's the big problem, no? In so many situations, I suffered so much, you know, this and that, you know. But no, our whole thing is we're not really concerned about our happiness and distress. And if we are concerned about it, then we shouldn't be so much concerned about being concerned about it. Okay, I'm gonna try and solve my happiness and distress. But why should I waste all my time, you know, trying to solve it? And I've never been able to solve it very effectively anyway, you know. I've tried to eat this, I've tried to eat that, I've tried to eat that and this, I've tried to, you know, this person, that person, and it never really has worked at all that well anyway. So let me try and keep going with the process here of getting what I want to eat, you know, sleeping where I want to sleep, and trying to take care of my problems, my defense, in a more effective way, you know. Yeah, but really, okay, let me. Well, how can I do something for Krishna, you know? And of course that happens because Krishna reveals himself to us. Let us, you know, let us be enthused in the service of Krishna as he enthuses us. And he's the Vibhava. He's the stimulus for all of our activities. And so, okay, he's very kind. So he's going to be stimulating us. He's going to tell people, you know, I really would like a new iPad for my birthday. In case anybody happens to be hearing this, you know, I would like a new iPad. You know, oh, really? You would? Okay, yeah. And I really would like to go down by the place by the Jamuna where we play and build bridges with the rocks today. Okay, yeah. So Krishna is expressing his desires, and then we can, you know, realize that we have an individual potency which we can cooperate with in that. And of course, higher levels, mamata, then Krishna becomes ours, and we start to figure out for Krishna what he would like that he hasn't even thought of. And this especially terminates in the gopis. They come up with ways for Krishna to play and have fun that he didn't even think of. You know, all kinds of different kinds of odd, compound, complicated things at times. So the demigods, at least at some point here, they're thinking, and maybe for their own benefit, unless we get to work, we're not going to get paid. But even maybe some attitude then of like for Krishna's satisfaction. Yeah? And of course, not Krishna, but they're talking about through, I guess, Garbhodaksha Vishnu. That's who they're conscious of here. They're talking to. Yeah? And so they all have individual potencies. You know, the god of the wind, Vayu's there, and he has his potency, and then Agni's there, he has his potency, Bhumi's there, she has her potency, Saraswati's there, she has her potency. And it's kind of odd consciousness to think of this, but it's very, very high level, you know. Like Agni and Vayu and Saraswati can glance at them or something and enliven them with knowledge, you know. And then Lakshmi can give everybody else other kinds of opulences like that, you know. So you see a potential maybe for conflict here. Yeah, but it's a very primordial level. But the thing is, there's no integration. And after they offer these prayers, only one more verse, the next chapter, the result is that Vishnu doesn't answer their prayers with an explanation or anything. And he asks, please tell us, but he actually just goes ahead and just does it. He actually just integrates them. and so they can start working together like that. You know? So that basically, that's kind of how I understand our perspective here. And maybe again, in our own service, you know, we see that actually what we're seeing now is that education program, there's so many different independent programs going on here and there. On an individual level, for example, last night we came here. It was interesting. We were Janmashtami, we were spent the night in Chosica, Peru. Then Prabhupada's Day, Festival Day, Sunday, we spent the night in Lima, Peru. Then Monday and Tuesday, we were in Mexico City. Now Wednesday and Thursday, Wednesday we're supposed to be here in Houston. Then Thursday and Friday, we're supposed to be in Atlanta and get back on Saturday to Tennessee. Yeah. But fortunately, they were upset, but fortunately, in some way for us, they canceled the program in Atlanta. So we're able to stay an extra night here. But now we're trying to figure out where to stay because this weekend is a big, festival here for Prabhupada's arrival in the U.S. Maybe seven sannyasis coming, everything else. And because we're staying one more night, we're trying to figure out where we should stay. And we're not sure yet. We have to, middle of the phone call here, and we have to, like, pack our bags. Yeah. So this is a kind of the situation of the demigods. You know? So last night we had our Bhakti Bhai Baba program here. They're on the third canto, finishing off the first semester, which is through chapter 15. So it was very nice working on it, organizing it, and talking to them. And afterwards, one of the students, one lady, she's a lawyer, her daughter, devotee also, she was studying political science at Northwestern University. And then she became more involved in Hridayananda Maharaj and talking to him, and used to change to theology, so she did. And she did her bachelor's degree on the theology of women in ISKCON. And her professor was just so pleased with it. You know, it's one of the best, you know, thesis papers she'd ever seen. So she did very good work. The history of women in ISKCON, I think it was like that. So then she went to help start the Krishna West program in Chapel Hill area, wherever it is, Carolinas, with Hridayananda Maharaj. But she had a lot of time left over, so she made an application. She got a $500,000 grant to do her PhD at Emory or something like that. It's over 5 years or something, and get $100,000 a year to do her doctorate. Education is not cheap now. Or else I guess you might say that money has become cheap. And so she's going to be doing it on some theology of Vaishnavism, like that, you know. And so this is what's happening. All these individual projects are actually quite developing, you know. And on our side, then we had the education symposium here at the end of July, August, and it was very successful. You know, all the different primary schools and everybody discussing things. We went to Mexico immediately, and the following weekend had another education symposium there. And again, people said it was like three times better than last year, and they wanted to do it. And the following weekend, we went down to Peru, and we had the education symposium there. And also, it was very, very successful, very popular. Then after that, we had the our Carl Jung and Bhagavata program, but this time it was sponsored by the National Library. And very many very responsible people from Peruvian culture were participating, head of the Psychiatric Society, you know, head of the philosophy department of San Marcos, which is the oldest university in the Western world. And we showed Peter Brook Mahabharata for two nights. And that also was a, you know, for them, my goodness, we didn't know India had this kind of, like, you know, cultural depth. So, and now as a result, what they want to do, they want to start a magazine, a periodical, and they want also to have next year a bigger symposium, and they're proposing the title of The Psychology of the Sacred, you know, which will allow, because some of them are very quite, you know, nice, enlightened, theistic people, and others are very much a polite Marxists and Freudians, like that. So that will allow people to express themselves. And the general principle is that people, you know, our idea is in these things is that monotheism should be accepted as an alternative. We're not saying it's the only alternative, but we should say that we want to say that yes, from a philosophical point of view, from a mental health point of view, that monotheism should be accepted as a valid alternative. course, some people think, no, they're just violently opposed. And monotheism is just superstition. It's the opiate of the people. It's a disease. And they actually seem to be, if you don't push people, you know, it seems that there's just not that many people who are really atheists. You know, it's hard to understand. As you read while I'm preaching, it'll be interesting how many people polarize left and how many people polarize right. But right now, so far, we're having experiences. As long as you just, you know, there is a range where people are willing to listen to other people, as long as you're willing to listen to them. And even though their current position may be, you know, bottom-up, that matter is creating everything, and the fossil records show this, you know, but they're willing to listen to other people's positions, but it may take some time before people actually progress. And for sure, as Vaishnava philosophy starts progressing, we'll make friends and we'll also make enemies. In fact, you know? And so the preaching goes on at different levels. But the demigods, you know, they at least basically, maybe because of their own self-preservation, their own desire to enjoy life, they want the Virat Rupa to start functioning. They want, you know, to be integrated. So they're praying to Vishnu, please, you know, please let us understand how to work in coordination like that. So the same way, all these different projects are developing. People are getting PhD grants to research Vaishnavism. You know, the Queen of England's visiting our primary schools. You know, and now they want us to make a 1 or 2 page presentation at the Indian conference on forming a strategy for developing the Sanskrit learning. You know, like that. Okay. One devotee, Pranadas, he's part of the Ministry of Education, developed the whole primary school in New Zealand. He was saying, it seems like it's about time to connect the dots. Like that. You have enough individual programs working here and there, here and there, here and there. So now how can we again connect the dots? And that's what he's saying, because the other demigods are in exactly the same position. I'm the god of the wind. Okay. I'm the god of the fire. Okay. I'm the goddess of learning. Okay. I'm the goddess of opulence. Okay. But let's try and connect it. You know, so fire can be cooperating with opulence and beauty, you know, like that and so on. And the gravity can be operating with bhumi, like that and so on. So it's kind of our thought when we read this verse, you know, this whole section like that. And specifically here, because other people, like, for example, some ecologists, they're actually demons, you know, and they think ecology is great, the ecology movement, because that will give them better information about how to exploit Mother Nature. If we can get more secrets out of Mother Nature, you know, then we'll be able to exploit her more. Very demoniac. In 2.1, you know, the first step in valorization, Prabhupada says that this pantheistic view of the Virat Rupa will have little effect if there's no service attitude. And actually, if there's an exploitation attitude, it will have the wrong effect, that people will destroy the world by understanding how it works in a more intimate fashion like that. So here the demigods, it appears that, you know, they're under control. Of course, Indra lost control. Of course, Krishna stimulated him. He already was a little bit arrogant, proud, and Krishna kind of stimulated him maybe to bring out, you know, a disease so it will become obvious. But he got so excessive, he was trying to kill the Brijbasis. Yeah, so demigods themselves also. And when that happened, Prabhupada says, of course, Indra is not a demon, but sometimes, you know, they become carried away, you know, these kind of, by their own opulence, just like that. But here, at least right now, it seems that they want to do this for Krishna's service, you know, to serve Krishna. You know, and so our same selves, too, if we're going to be connecting the dots and developing our own school, our own university in North America, you know, like that. And starting then to have so many people coming and joining, and how do we keep ourselves from becoming, you know, too passionate and too much in the thought that we're the controller, like that. So Prabhupada said you just chant 16 good rounds, follow the four principles strictly, and you'll never become influenced by this kind of consciousness like that. I think it has an intrinsic value, but also it's a contract, you know, with Krishna through Prabhupada. So this is the basic principle that makes us not only demigods, but like, you know, Majjhima Adhikari demigods. Yeah. And later, of course, the thing is run the whole place, like run the puppet show, you know, so we can become purified. Other people can also become purified. And in every circumstance, remember that we're the children, and Krishna is the Father. He's the Adya Purusha Purana. This concept of the Father, because obviously that little child is carried in his father's arms, father's supposed to be taking care of his wife and everything else so she can be sheltered doing her job, you know. And the father is the king is the father of all the living entities in the state. So this concept of God the Father, of course, is very powerful. The Christian credo is we believe in one God, okay, not many, Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, by whom all things are created. You know? So very universal concept of God as the Father. You know? In India, what Vishnu, but Vishnu, I guess he's the father. Brahma ends up being like the grandfather with a beard and that kind of stuff. But Vishnu, you know, according to the Bhagavatamrita, is 16 years old, like that. And he's never presented in some ways as, I don't know, is he the father? Because even you know, sculptures and stuff, we see a Vishnu. It seems like he's always being presented pretty much as being a youth in many ways. And then Brahma is more like, you know, the father of things. And it's a little interesting then how the concept is there. But the basic principle, we probably says here also, that we know the Christian concept is the one God, you know, Father Almighty. And of course, we might say baby all mischievous. You know, we believe in one God, baby all mischievous. You know? But the Prabhupada is saying here this concept of God, we also accept this in that sense. You know? And then, of course, we have potency, and Krishna is trying to please us. And he says that we can become more than Krishna. Yeah, we become more than Krishna by his mercy, and we can just do great service. The Prabhupada says one man was waiting to go see like a prime minister or something. And finally he looked in the room, and there the prime minister had his grandson on his back and was bouncing him around, playing horsey, you know. And so Krishna then derives his own satisfaction, becoming our child and everything else like that and so on. So we can ask for this potency, you know, to be able to serve Krishna, you know, in these other relationships. And of course they're always experimenting, always new, you know, always developing like that, you know. So it's kind of our complication of this verse, you know. I don't know if anybody else right away has any discussions. It's pretty simple in some ways for us. These are the demigods' topics here are pretty simple. So any comments or questions by anybody else?
Maharaj, I have a question for you, please.
Okay.
The purport Srila Prabhupada and the verse also mentions the different gradations and species of living entities. We were just reading yesterday how they estimate that there's about 2 million different species present on the earth right now, and of those, that's only 99.9% of the total species that ever existed, but they're all extinct. Anyway, lots and lots of species. We learned from biology, the way they differentiate species is if two species, if they have sexual intercourse, if they're sterile, you know, just like a horse that mates with a zebra, there will be no offspring. So therefore, there are different species. Although it's interesting because the Nazis considered the Jews to be a different species. But anyway, in how is it understood in the Veda? What is a species?
I also haven't heard any you know, any kind of the definition. But I kind of also thinking the same thing. I guess all the rest of it, like phyla and all this kind of stuff, the breakdowns, I've seen a description of that saying that it's really kind of hard to figure out what is a phyla and what is this and that.
Kingdom, thing. Phylum, class, order, family, genus, and species.
Thank you. You're a genius. You belong to the phylum of genius.
I was a zoology major.
Okay. Okay. We belong to the phylum of zoology major who was a boat captain. Yeah. But so that the rest, right, the rest, I mean, that's the kind of the definition. What is it? It's the same species if they can mate and produce viable offspring. like if a horse and a donkey mate, they produce a mule. And the mule is okay. The reaction is there. The child is there, but the mules are only they don't produce any more mules. One sex. Yeah. And it's, I guess, pretty reasonable definition. Then I heard you guys talking about it. What about Chihuahuas and Great Danes? can they have relationships and produce a Chihuahua? That is something.
And they break species down into subspecies.
Okay, we got subspecies like that. My goodness, we got zoologists and the subspecies, ichthyologists, and yeah. So I haven't heard I don't know. Ari knows, but I haven't heard any more about how they do. And I was kind of wondering myself, you know, how the species are broken down. I have a suspicion because the Vedas, we end up seeing the Vedas are quite analytical and quite, and usually the analyses are quite reasonable. The kind of simple things you can experience without getting into all kinds of microscopic stuff or 40 million years worth of this and that, you know, like Ayurveda. It's a very simple, like, combination of elements and this and that. So that's all I know, you know, why the species are called species and stuff.
Raj, what do you think? I mean, I could speculate on this. What do you think Prabhupada meant by, in the purport, and I may not have it exact because I'm not in front of my computer right now, that sometimes the son or the child, the son becomes more than the father.
Well, it's like I was talking about the example that, you know, the father becomes the horsey and the son becomes the rider and tells him, go here, go there, you know, bounce more. And the son gets more empowered. And Jesus Christ, you know, Jesus Christ has given, you know, authority over things like that. You know.
I guess you could say Prabhupada, in one sense, did more than Krishna. At least in terms of spreading the Sankirtan movement, he did more than Lord Chaitanya in the sense that he spread it all over the world. Lord Chaitanya preached and spread it throughout India. But yeah. Prabhupada took it all over the world. It's unprecedented in the entire Vaishnava history as we know it.
Again, the Nirbandha Krishna Sambandha Yukta Vairagya Uchate. Prabhupada understood how, I guess actually better is Mayatatamidam Sarvam Jagaravyakta Murtinam Asnani Sarabhutani, that he understood how this all these modern bewildering media could be used for Krishna. He made hippies into happies. And you see, if Prabhupada was here now, you know, who would he say? Oh, he said, hippies are our best customers, you know. So who would he say are our best customers now, you know, like that? And how would he adjust the marketing scheme, everything else? Yeah.
What, Maharaj, you talked, you sort of caught my attention, and I don't know if you're able to answer this, but you talked about the thesis that was written that the professor thought was the best thesis that he had read or she had read regarding the history of women in ISKCON. Do you have any highlights of that to share with us?
No, I don't. See, that's what's happening is that, you know, the symposium we had here in North America at the end of July on education basically fell into four categories. One was about the Ministry of Education and what it's supposed to be doing and what it can do for people. The other section, Vishwambar, from the Gurukula and the primary school in Alachua. Actually, it's more than primary school now. He's authorized to give diplomas all the way up to the first year of college now. You know, so the school there, it was K-12. He took charge of that one, and then Radhika Ramah was doing the higher education, university education level, and myself and the devotees here were doing Shastric education like that. So the university level, that was one thing that's coming up, is because, you know, devotees are doing master's and PhD thesis, you know. Okay, so what are they writing on? And then beyond that, just to, you know, trying to connect up those things so we get the information. The thing is, then there could be recommendation about what to do research on. For example, celibacy. You know, it's like a topic, you know, and they say, well, all the information is that monks and nuns all get prostate cancer more than other people or something, you know, whatever. But no, so a lot of work can be done at the master's degree level of generating information and the truth about things that are strategically relevant to our presenting people with a good view of reality. As far as I know, if you can back up a statement with a master's thesis, they can't take it down from the Wikipedia. That's you know, the minimum level of authority you need to keep something there, even under attack. So you see a master's thesis shows this and that, you can put it in there. So that's what's happening, is we need, you know, to have a coordination, a database, information base about these different topics like that. Beyond that, it's probably it'd be interesting, even for people to read what's happening and stuff like that. And Yadananda Swami did his master's thesis on the history of sannyas in ISKCON, and he interviewed a lot of people. And his conclusion was that most people left the sannyas ashram because they were bored. It was like most people. It was just no real engagement. You go to class in the morning, even sit in your room the rest of the day and look at the wall or something, you know. He also, it was very interesting. He also did a group creep on other people. He did it. But the same thing, too. It was very, very interesting to his university. And it should be published. It should be, you know, circulated like that. So I don't know, but that's what's happening. Is we need to know. Maybe I can talk a little bit about our experience results here, because part of this thing, the whole thing is that the Bhagavatam, we're trying to learn it, you know, as preaching. It's an example, so many examples of how people are preaching to different people here, how people are, you know, getting integrated with devotional service, you know, and acting properly. And then, of course, we're doing actual practical preaching and coming in contact with people. So this program at the National Library in Peru, which is a very big building, beautiful building, like, I don't know, six stories or something, modern steel and glass. And also, too, very respectable. They have books, you know, from the 1550s or something, or very old things. It was very strange, because as we were talking to the director, Ramon Mojica, and he was like very friendly, like it's like, you know, very, what's the word, like natural affinity and stuff, you know, with us and what was happening and so on. And so my mother's grandfather, was, he graduated from West Point. I think he went on in the army up to captain, and he was getting bored, so he left and opened a bookstore in like someplace in Chicago or something like that, Ohio. And he did different things, printed what he wanted to print. But he also printed the world's smallest Bible. And he used silver plates. And my godmother took me when I was a child to see it in the Huntington Museum in Los Angeles. And it's very small. It's maybe about like, you know, two fingers width, you know. And somebody a few years later used gold plates and printed one a little bit smaller, but not much. So they're both there in the museum with a magnifying glass on them. So I was mentioning that because he's, you know, the library and everything else. And he said, how many did he print? And I said, I don't know. And he said, well, I think we have one here. And he said that in one of our most secure vaults, we have like, you know, the world's smallest Bible, like this and that. So very, very nice rapport. And for the conference, we're looking for some basis where we can start talking about things. So Carl Jung is our first bridge. Probably like him. It's looking well. But his most recent book about him, which goes through the whole history of how he was developing psychology, and other people were developing psychology from the, I say, 1860 on up to 1960, and how what we have, you know, as a result of this work and effort in terms of psychology, is too big. So therefore, we focused in on the what do you call them there, the Kundalini lectures, and those were given about 1932 in Zurich. And one Christian missionary who went to India and came back quite Hinduized, very intelligent. He gave a lecture the week before just on the chakras, you know, directly. I think it's called the Sat Deepika something chakra book they're using, you know. And so this is 1932. And they already were coming across and reading Sanskrit and reading translations and penetrating, you know. So Jung's description of the different levels of the chakra, maybe I mentioned this before, but it was pretty useful because it's like a Sankhya. In the verse we did this morning in the Bhagavatam, it says that after hearing Swayambhu Manu's, Satyavrata Maharaja's prayers, then Matsya speaks Sankhya to him. So Sankhya is, many people consider it the oldest part of the Vedas. You know? And it's kind of the analysis. It means to break things into different categories and then to see how, you know, the Supreme Lord is there in the ultimate sense. So it was a very useful tool because they themselves, in terms of psychiatry and Freudian psychology and, you know, analyzing the mind, different elements and so on, they're also engaged in Sankhya. You know? And so Jung was starting from the Muladhara chakra, which is the most fundamental down there, and then going up and then equating it with different elements, you know, and so on, and how people think at different levels. It was quite amazing, his comprehension, quite enlightening, you know. And again, for his time, it seems way far ahead of what's happening. So it's interesting, the Muladhara chakra is basically related to three things: urinating, defecating, and copulating. Okay. Now, if you do any of those things in public, in most places, you'll be arrested. It's like you cannot publicly, you know, express the Muladhara chakra. That's for, if you're a child or something else like that, an animal, okay. So that's, of course, related to earth. You know, that connection is very well. Then we go up a little bit to the stomach, and the stomach, of course, is always supposed to be full of water and these kind of fluids. So we get the natural progression here, the water. The next level we come to with the diaphragm. Now we're coming from water, earth, water, to fire, okay? And somehow related to there, which seems more related to air, prana, but it's a fire element. He was making this point. He was saying that we Swiss people feel uncomfortable talking about anything below the diaphragm, you know? Where he says his Germans many times are quite robust about how they're filling their bellies and this kind of stuff and laughing or whatever. And he says we Swiss people feel a little, like, you know, insulted that someone's talking about those things. You know? So the different levels of consciousness. And it's not that we're just in one or the other. Of course, maybe we're like predominantly in the heart chakra, but we have, you know, some meditation, some contemplation of lower chakras, you know, so on. And maybe during different times and different environments, you know, the balance switches like that and so on. He was saying it seems that most people are rooted in the Muladhara chakra. We're going here and there, we're doing this and that, everything else. But it's basically what Prabhupada was saying is that really, you know, he said the ordinary person cannot work without sex gratification. He won't, just won't go to work, he won't do anything. That's in the end, that means I can go home and it's going to be a comfortable arrangement for satisfying my Muladhara chakra. Yeah. So we have these, we can talk, we can communicate, we can use our intellectual chakras and stuff like that, but really they are predominated and in the service of the lower chakras. And of course the higher chakras become very activated and we're there by austerity, whatever else, then the Muladhara chakra is not bad, you know. All the organs become enlightened, the sexual relations become regulated and become divine, you know. So it was a very nice discussion. He went up like that, and he came up to the level of sound, and that's what he said, this is where the psychic elements start. So in terms of the body, we're coming to the ear, and we're coming to space, and he said at this level, all that's left is the gross element is maybe just some kind of like senses. Yeah, space. But you can see his comprehension of that level was very, very limited. And then beyond that, the higher intellectual levels, everything else, he said, this is more or less speculation for us in the Brahma Rudra. And many people take the Kundalini thing as when you come to the top, you merge into the Brahman, like that. But it seems more, what it's saying is at that point you have access to Brahma Loka, which is still a material Loka in that sense. You know? So it was very, very good stimulation for discussion, the Sankhya point. And quite extraordinarily, the morning class in Lima was exactly on the same thing. Prabhupada was talking about the chakras and how the yoga involved with them, what they mean. And he said, but this is impractical. It's a bona fide system, but it's impractical at the present time. Therefore, we engage in Lord Chaitanya's Gandharva Veda, singing, dancing, and drama. So it was very easy for me then to make a presentation. I just followed Prabhupada and talking about a little bit. And most people, what the result was, that most people said that it was just too much, wasn't enough time. You know, a lot of it was such interesting things and very good presentation. These people are not stupid. Yeah, finish off, and one of the people that were there was Hector Behar, And he was one of Che Guevara's, like, you know, generals, coordinators. One regiment was named after him. And he was, of course, engaged in this guerrilla warfare, finally got caught, was incarcerated for about, I think, 6 years, then given a pardon. And now he's teaching at many universities there in Peru, publishes a book every year, you know? And very intelligent person, very nice, you know? And he's saying the same thing, that the real change is not going to take place in rituals and logical understanding, but people need, like, what he called a paradigm, or he said Jung is calling an archetype. And he said the paradigm has to come to the point of a father. You know, not the biological father, he said, but a father who can guide us, you know, who governs our relationships. And he started naming the past presidents who've been elected in Peru. And I know a little bit about that, but not as much as people there. But I was looking at it, seeing the Peruvians were shocked at his, like, precise description of who we're electing. Like, you know, a thief and this and that, on and on. So he said Peru is not suffering from an improper paradigm. It's suffering from a total lack of paradigm. And I was like, you know, see, so many things these people are coming to the conclusions. It's like, you know, there's so many people in the world that seem to have a lot more zeros than we do. You know, I've got 2 zeros, so I put a 1 in front, I've got $100. But a lot of other people in the world have like 7 zeros, and all they need is just a 1. And then they're going to be great devotees and great, you know, participants, great contributors like that. So he was, the name of the conference was actually mental health, you know, and so on and so forth, so on. So he's actually on UNESCO, member of UNESCO. And as I remember the exact figures, he was saying that UNESCO's survey is that 800,000 people a year are committing suicide now. You know? And that's more than all the people that are dying from all these advertised civil wars and everything else like that and so on. You know? So the real killer in the modern world is not political problems. It's mental problems. You know, the mind. The mind is the worst enemy of all of us in that sense. So very, very good result. And then, you know, understanding the devatas and how the world's being created and stuff at different times, you know, understanding these things. Because there are people like that, like this in the world. It's not everybody is just a gross, simple person. There are some people who are in the world who are the leaders. You know, somehow or other, if we get in contact with them and their ideas, you know, influence other people and so on. Okay, so any final comments or questions?
Yes, Myers, this is very interesting about Carl Jung's works on the chakras. Do you have a summary of this, of your presentation? Or is it a difficult read? You know, it takes a lot of research.
His book is like, that's the thing about his books. They're all, not only are they interesting, and they really stimulate you to see our philosophy from a different perspective, and they're useful. But the other thing is that everybody who reads them says it really made them think about themselves, you know, because that's what he is. He's a psychological doctor, you know. So when you read the things, you really think about yourself, what's going on, and it helps you, you know, like that. So the book is, what's it called? It's called the Kundalini Lectures, you know. And it was Shandra Shambhash, and he's a tremendous, very nice scholar. They all agreed, yeah, it's one of the Jungian traditions, is they're all excellent scholars, you know, following him. But he got all the papers, and there were apparently 3 people were doing shorthand, and then after those were taken down, they were sent back to the original presenters and the questioners, and they were edited, and other people, there was exchange of correspondences before the program, you know, and footnotes. You can actually, if Amazon, you can have a reader, you can just pay and get an electronic copy.
Well, do you have a summary of your presentation?
No, nothing I wrote down, you know. Well, maybe we're going to publish it like that, but basically what I just said was just the basic point. Basically, it's anamaya, pranamaya, and manomaya, like that. You know?
Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my obeisances. Thank you so much for the class. I just wanted to, it's very inspiring when you actually telling us in detail what's going on with educational part in ISKCON. And it seems to me that Varnashram Dharma is taking naturally, you know, like Lord Chaitanya really preparing the ground. And because in Russia, it's similar things happening right now. You probably know that they couldn't open that temple, and finally devotees understood that they have to have educational institution like college, you know, to be open. So anyway, it's very, very inspiring. Do you think it's what I'm saying, that Varnashram Dharma is already happening, it's correct?
No, actually, even though the primary school program, you know, the K-12 program, they wanted to have practical meetings. They didn't want to discuss so much like have lectures. They wanted to get together and do workshops and discuss funding, accreditation. But actually, after getting together for the first time, there's maybe five schools in North America, they actually decided we still don't have our strategy worked out. And we still don't have our philosophy of education worked out. So that's what I've been doing like the last, you know, three or four conferences. Started off with Mother Ermila and Dasha Mandala. So our perspective is following, you know, the nectar of instruction, which of course is just the basis, and everything else is just the echo of that. That the heart, you know, we did a little graphic for everybody to remember. You got a nice big yellow sun, okay? Right in the center is our purpose, our goal of education is to become qualified to help Lord Chaitanya in the Sankirtan mission. The Prabhupada says, nectar of instruction, the Lord Chaitanya's mission is to give the science of Krishna consciousness to everybody else. And if we want to do that, then we have to follow the instructions of the Goswamis, you know, read the books. That's it. That's the whole thing. Varnashram, everything else. You know, Varnashram, then the picture is a little crescent, you know, down below that. So we need some background, some training, some education in Varnashram. But if we always better remember that we're trying to give Lord Chaitanya's science of Krishna consciousness. And then Varnashram becomes very natural. It fits in. It has its place. It has its purpose, you know, in terms of our Sankirtan movement. And the final thing is we have an arrow above the crescent moon and the full sun, and that's prema. And that's the whole purpose of education, is to revive our original relationship, you know, with Krishna and one of the five primary rasas. So then every single teacher has to be able to figure out adoshvara, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, and artanivriti. My student may be in the third grade, but what's their level? You know, this kid's on nishta. Well, this kid is in adoshvara. You know? And then how to help them, that's the education. How to help them to go ahead and develop their spiritual culture. Then automatically they'll be good Sankirtan devotees and they'll fit into the Varnashram thing. So I would say that it's, without the Sankirtan spirit, any place, even in Russia, then the Varnashram won't naturally manifest. What is this? 70% of all American marriages, first marriages, end in divorce now. You know? So then that's without that. There's no without marriage. There's no Varnashram. That's the lowest. But that's the first level. You know, it's having marriage with marriage, you know, institution. Otherwise, it's animal life. That's what I would say.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, so I guess we'll go here.
Maharaj, it's great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Okay, well, it's nice to be back. when I was, my mind, being a Sautkam devotee here, when I was outside of America, what kept occurring in my mind again and again was frozen orange juice and crunchy peanut butter. Amply available in North America, you know, frozen orange juice, and I guess you could live on that or something, you know. Okay, so thank you all very much, and we'll try and stay, also, we'd like to hear in the classes, too. So we'll see what's going to happen. Tomorrow will be, I guess, we're in transit here, but hopefully we'll settle down and back in Tennessee and have a little more grounded existence rather than being floating around the air in the last 6 weeks.
Hey, Maharaj, all glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Thank you.
Thank you all from North America, South America, and wherever. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you.